some death metal.
Don't you know we're recording a fucking podcast?
Hi everybody, I'm Duncan Krieger. Welcome to DefenderCast. Finally, we get a chance to show you guys something slightly different. We are recording a podcast, both in sound and on video, and I'm incredibly excited to bring the next few guests to you. Please hold on to your seats and enjoy the ride. Just before I go, I don't get a chance to do this very often. Please make sure that you leave a little comment wherever you're watching or listening. Thumbs up would be really nice, and subscribe so that you are kept up to date with what we're up to. There is a mailing list which I will ask you to subscribe to for all tab things, and most importantly, don't forget to give me some feedback because I'd really appreciate it. Hi, good afternoon. Actually, it's good evening now. It was good afternoon pretty much when we started setting up. Welcome to DefenderCast. We're actually in a Defender now. This is season 2, episode 3. I absolutely loved recording in this Defender. And in my head, we were going to get rid of this Defender and get a bigger one. But actually, I don't know, something kind of nice and cozy about this. We have just interviewed Joseph Hall, Joe Hall from Gift & Go, or IR Technology. And it was really interesting. It's something talking about culture again, which is a repeating theme, talking about not growth hacking, but just talking about growth in general and how to build a team and what sort of people are required. I think you'll enjoy this one. I really did. Looking forward to getting some feedback. Thank you. This is the very, very first DefenderCast brought to you from a Land Rover Defender. This was my vision, or this is my vision for DefenderCast. It's for us to take this podcast on the road. We're halfway there because we're in the car, but we're on the driveway. On the road. Welcome to the one that is the king of Joe, Joe Hall. How you doing?
I feel very privileged to be christening the Defender. Why a Defender?
Well, it's a good question, actually. I mean, I think a lot of people are wondering why Defender.
I've never been in a Defender before.
Well, there you go. Like,
what is this?
Like, this is, I think, a seriously cool car. It is. This is just like, okay, the idea for DefenderCast was to take a podcast on the road. So rather than to have a fixed podcast studio where people come to us, I wanted to take the podcast out and go and interview people in their natural surroundings. It's clearly not that easy, and we'll pop up some pictures of what this place looks like right now. But you know, it's fun, it's different. Why a Defender over a over something else? Like, well, I don't know. What do you want? A Rolls Royce or
No, what's the one with the seats that lie down?
The Viano,
the Maybach. Yeah, it should have been the Maybach.
Fine,
you would have got
Okay, so that's it. Thanks for coming.
No, it's good to be here.
It's just, really good. It's a bit different. It's a bit fun. In fact, what I want to do is get a bigger Defender because you can get a slightly longer one and then turn it into a cigar lounge.
Yeah.
So we can sit comfortably.
Yeah.
And
look at other people smoking cigars. Basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fake it.
We can do whatever we want from there, basically. Okay. Yeah, but the idea is eventually we will be able to live stream from something like this, and we'll be able to take it on the road, and then if necessary, just go pitch up in the middle of a field somewhere and have a chat, or at a festival, as I said to you before. So yeah, we're just trying it out. I don't really know, to be honest.
You don't really know.
I haven't really got.
Why are you actually doing this? Like, what is the core driver behind all of this? You know, you can't see the five other people that have also turned up here for all of this madness.
I think the drive behind this is just documenting my journey. Okay. So I think I haven't talked to you much about it, but I've definitely said to everybody else, my sort of plan here is to document the journey and to show people what it takes to get something like this app off the ground. And I think, you know, these little bits behind the scenes, if you like, are really, really important. It's like always focused on how we're going to get this in front of loads of people, how we're going to get them interested. And the podcast's just been getting better and better. Guests are getting better and better. Content's getting better. And it's just a different way for people to kind of absorb what we're up to, as I heard you saying before, in their own time, on a fly, on their way to work, on the train, whatever it may be. So the podcast is a small part of the bigger plan, which is content. Create content, document the journey, and show people what we're up to.
Yeah.
But this podcast is more about you.
And okay. What you're up to.
Terrifying, but okay.
Yeah. Well, it's just for us to kind of, look, we've been talking much, much more because our, we're like in a kind of similar
our
place.
Our paths have crossed.
You've introduced me to people that are helping me get my vision into the real world.
I think that's the most important thing as well. It's like, if you have an idea and it's something that you can fund and take forward and you believe in it, then you need to see that in reality as soon as possible. Yeah. Even if it's, you know, the most terrible MVP you've ever seen, even if it's, you know, a fake demo on, yeah. you know, whatever.
Something.
You have to get something online in front of your face that you can actually see, start to get more excited, show other people, get feedback, like, as soon as possible. That's the most critical thing. And when I see, you know, some startup pitches today and people that are trying to get funding for their business and they don't have that and it's just an idea and a PowerPoint,
yeah.
I'm like, dude, no, that's your...
Yeah, I guess it's easier in this day and age for you and I'm looking at it, think it's easier in this day and age to get to the next level. So the only thing, you know, why haven't you got there already? What's holding you back? What's stopping you? That's why it's frustrating. Even when I go through my own pitch deck, what I'd rather do is say, look at this content we're creating. Look at the people that we're meeting. Here's a video of us with the tech firm getting this off yeah. the ground. Here's us sitting down talking about how we can make things better. So tell us a bit about what you're up to.
I'm up to my eyeballs in it at the moment in just everything. It's like this exciting, terrifying time of the business's
what's
journey,
exciting,
I suppose.
What's terrifying?
We're so much. So much excites me, especially right now. I'm about 5 weeks away from delivery of a big project. And I'll go back and start and at the beginning. We're a gifting technology company. I believe we've even come up with a new concept which we're calling gift tech, in the same way that financial technology is fintech. It's not like some kind of verbiage. Like, I truly believe that we've created a platform that is a gifting technology platform that hasn't ever existed before. And our platform allows companies to create their own promotions and marketing campaigns, whether it's like an acquisition campaign to get new users or a retention campaign, something to give to existing users. Our platform allows them to send real life physical gifts or rewards, whatever you want to call them, to people all over the world. And we've done that by building Theme Builder, which lets people build their own websites and publish them. Like simple gifting sites. Hey, Duncan, you get an email. Hey, here's a URL. Here's a code. Go to this website, enter the code, pick one of the three gifts, enter your delivery details, and, you know, get the item the next day. In our case, we partnered with Amazon 20 months ago. That was been a roller coaster with them, like an amazing journey to go from conceptual idea to building it, investing the money, coming out the other side, it actually works, you know, wicked, you know. Now obviously transactions are flowing through, and we get to ride off the back of Amazon in terms of like product selection. So think any product in the world in Amazon, they have hundreds of millions of products. We can take any one of them, plug it into a site, you know, you could give it to a tab customer, your top 10 customers every month. Hey, pick a reward on us. You curate a catalog of, like, I don't know, 10 different items, an iPad, whatever, like a Louis Vuitton handbag.
We'll probably do that.
You make these catalogs and you build a site, add your branding, your customize your backgrounds, add your logos, make the look and feel of it really good. It looks super slick on mobile, which is where the majority of our of the end users anyway are redeeming stuff from. And so basically, you know, that's what we did.
How did you even come up with this? How did you end up with a gift tech startup? And
through
because it's like, you know, people, yeah, it's like, where did the idea come from? Is it something that's been developing over many, many years? Or did you?
There's a guy like just caning out music like. Yeah, I don't know what it is, like some death metal.
Don't you know we're recording a fucking podcast?
So, no, it's fine. How did we come up with it? It's it took a long time.
It's not being picked up on the mic.
So fine, cool.
Oh, wicked.
How'd you come up with it?
It took it came off the back of another business that was made in 2008. And that business focused solely on like loyalty and reward campaigns in the online gambling industry. So you find a lot of online gambling companies send stuff globally to their players, whether it's for a competition, a new campaign, something that Betfred did and put on the TV, you know, sign up today with Betfred, enter this code to win a free gift. It's a £5 gift delivered to the user's door. Next day, Amazon Prime. Yeah. The experience was super slick. They put the TV ads out and yeah, you know, it's great, great for us.
So out of interest, would they have a need for your product or have they done it themselves? Is it something that they've...
Yeah, like, good question. In the past, Sally from the marketing team would go to the post office after buying 10 things from Amazon and try and ship them and have a manual spreadsheet that she kept. And, you know, this still exists today to somewhat in some companies. It existed in the larger companies like 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And Initial Rewards, the company that we found in 2008, started that journey, but could never scale outside of the gaming industry because it was doing everything very manually. Our own warehouses, our own pick and pack staff, buying stock, having to actually judge.
So the bit of tech that you've built is plugging in that existing business that you know there's a need for into talking to Amazon and doing all of the,
it's like
all of the bit in the middle.
We took 10 years of learning and making every mistake possible that you could ever make and started a new company, new platform, brand new code base, new ideas. And by this point, Amazon and, you know, other retailers out there had caught up tech-wise and have some public services that you could tap into. So it was just a question of like timing, learning, and being in the right place, all of us, the three partners, in the right place to come together, you know, put the money in,
yeah,
roll the thing out. And it's been a roller coaster.
When did you start? When did you actually start?
We formed the company in... We decided we were going to do it in August 2017. We formed the company in the December. And that's when we first went to Amazon. I think like around that time, December 2017. We launched December 28th, 2018. So it was a year of dev. And we made some silly mistakes as well. Like we got too excited too early. We took a big exhibition space out in a big show, you know, went hell for leather with it all. And then obviously the product was nowhere nearly ready. We're starting to see inquiries coming in. And it was a lot of plate spinning.
Sorry, it's your water bottle.
Yeah. Plate spinning, yeah. Keeping things, you know, warm while we develop the product and just living that life.
I think you said before that's going to be a kind of continued theme that you're never going to go, okay, done.
Yeah, done.
Finished. Never. We're finished now. We're just going to sit back and watch the cash roll in. I mean, that's part of...
2-year roadmap in my head at all times. And like every time, instead of...
Okay, so always thinking 2 years ahead.
In terms of what we want to build, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Is that because it can't all be built? I mean, in some ways you could scale up and build it all now. Why not? Why are you not building it all?
I think if you're raising money and you're talking or selling the vision of your company, you should know these things and you should be used to telling people, here's what I'm plan on doing for the next 2 years and spending, you know, money on, maybe even your money on.
Yeah.
And you should be able to say that with conviction and understanding of, yeah, I've thought about this. Here are the important things. And I think when you start rolling anyway, it's not even that difficult. Things become obvious. We know we need to do more features here.
So what's your biggest challenge at the moment then? Or what's the thing? Because obviously, like within my business, it's like brick walls get built up every day and we either need to smash them down or find a way around them. And those things are things that I definitely wasn't expecting this week. I thought we'd have other challenges to attack first. Kind of just the excitement of like, okay, this is the issue of the day. This is what I need to deal with now. What's troubling you at the moment, or what's exciting?
What's troubling you? Loads.
Anything anyone can help
you? I think that, for cheap. I think there's a lot of unexpected stuff that happens. And on our platform, we give people the ability to make their own sites, to do their own stuff, to publish it in real time. So I can wake up in the morning and be like, oh, this client's just done that. That looks cool. well, this client's done that. I wouldn't have done that. I would have changed that.
Yeah, and, or I didn't know he could do that.
Sometimes. Or is that going to work? Yeah. Is that actually going to work? So there's quite a lot of that. And I think feedback is instant. Yeah. Why don't you have this feature? I really need this. I can't do my job. Or, you know, the accounting team can't get this information if you don't put this field in this report. And it just instantly starts to come in. And then you've got to decide whether it's a bug or whether it's, something else.
Something either in your two-year roadmap or it's something that you need to fit into your two-year roadmap that you hadn't considered properly.
These things will dictate your roadmap. These, like the micro events will definitely influence the big stuff, okay, for sure. You know, and we've seen that. We're living through that right now. And we're having to explain to people exactly what we're seeing, what our feedback is, what the reality is. Here's what we're going to spend more money on fixing. Here's what's going really well as well. Like that's been a really cool thing for us to organically just have sign-ups. It's a wonderful feeling to wake up and be like, oh, a real person just signed up to our platform. Yeah. Awesome.
Where did they come?
Like, who are you? And we're nimble enough to be able to
get on the front foot, start talking to them.
Instant. First client that ever signed up, I called him within 10 minutes of him signing up, you know. And
it's really important, actually. I mean, I'm learning this and I'm definitely considering it more and more, but there's this kind of mentality that it's a tech business, so no one actually ever needs to speak to anyone. If you build the platform right, people should be able to sign up, come and transact business. I think the reality is it's kind of merged, or it should be merged a little bit with old school sales, which is, hi, you've just registered. I want to introduce myself. I'm the CEO. We value your business. What can we do to help? How can we support you? That's definitely part of TAB strategy, which is that we are going to seriously work hard to make every single user into a proper customer, into a client, and we're going to give them the time that they deserve. I mean, with our product, we're expecting people to deposit a minimum of £1,000 and start buying property.
I love this concept.
So
I do like this concept.
Yeah.
But I think as well, like, it's onboarding 101 for your business. You have to know how to onboard a client, whether it's an end customer, a B2B customer. And I don't think any two industries, whatever you want to call it, are the same. I think different rules apply differently.
In some respects, no two customers are the same. And even sometimes, if they're out of the same category or the same batch, it might be they need to be.
I think what I'm trying to say is you should have a process that works for you guys. I truly believe in being as hands-off as possible. I think automate the fuck out of everything as much as possible when you're doing KYC and maybe complex stuff that you're doing.
Yeah.
You're going to have an element of manual decision-making potentially, or you're going to have like a manual process where you have to verify a document manually or whatever. Yeah. Like that was always a pain in the ass working in fintech.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Joe, quickly. Ask you about your like really quick plotted history of your experience with fintech and gaming, and you know, because a lot of the things, it's not just about your previous and sort of gift business. It's more, it's sort of merged.
Everything I've learned has all merged or converged to this point now, where I'm using everything, every little bit of skill from anything I've done. That's what I feel like.
Yeah.
So I started...
Definitely can relate to that. I mean, I say that all the time. Yeah, everything I've done in my life has led me to being able to think this way and to get this business off the ground.
Yeah, and to use... absolutely. And I started... I was into music. I started making music at 15. I went... Still do, yeah. Don't need to speak about that.
You might overlay one of your tracks.
No, we don't need to talk about that. That's a secret, hidden life.
Not anymore.
No, that's a hidden life. It's a hobby. It's good to have that release. And actually, I've been quite active the last couple of years, and I've, you know, got involved with some bigger live projects, actually. Okay. So that's all been good. But anyway, I flirted with music, went to music school, and decided very early on, like in university, this isn't for me. I don't want to do this. I don't want to finish uni. I just want to do music. I want to sort of be a DJ, be a producer, and quit everything. My parents were devastated. Always sort of top of average academically and in every subject. And I suppose it just got to the point where music wasn't going to work for me. It's working for this guy behind us.
It's good that we've got
caning it out
badly. It's actually not bad.
It's all right. He I just basically realized at some point in my mid-20s, maybe 23, 24, that music wasn't going to work and I had to start at the very bottom.
Wasn't going to work why? To make a living?
Yeah, it wasn't going to work for me to make a living. I wasn't set up right in the home, in the household, like to be able to do it. I couldn't smash music out loudly. My parents didn't back me in music. Like, it was annoying for them. Go and get a real job, go and get a real job. Yeah. So I had to go and get a job starting from the very bottom, and I was slapping boxes in a warehouse in Hatfield at 22, 23 years old. You know, not going anywhere fast, and literally had to work my way up and sell myself and do, you know, do all these things. Got into online gambling at about when the poker boom happened around 2003.
How did that come up? How did you...
All of a sudden, all of my mates wanted to play poker. And I'm, you know, I was like, why? What's going on? And my best friend was like, online poker is the thing. You can make money. You can actually make money here, learn the game, and it's on TV. And I don't know if you know the story about Moneymaker, Chris Moneymaker.
No.
This guy who in the US played a qualifying tournament for $20 or $10, whatever. The internet will correct me.
Yeah.
But he paid a very small amount of money, entered a local qualifier at a bar in America, won the qualifier, went to the World Series, won the whole thing, $15 million or whatever, or $20 million bucks. And it was a massive, massive story. Online poker really blew up that year or the year before in the States. It was a massive pastime for Americans. It came to Europe. It was very lightly regulated. We don't need to talk about the regulation, but it was very lightly regulated in those times.
Which meant it just took off quickly everywhere.
It just exploded. It was a new form of gambling, and people didn't consider it gambling. They considered themselves poker players. It came with this aura. It was our generation winning tens, hundreds, millions of dollars online, balling
in
out.
In their bedroom,
and then buying the Lambo, and like, it's pre-Instagram, really, all of this baller stuff, but... which makes it a bit more mystical, I think. It was all online forums and, I went to this casino, I actually saw this guy, or he's on TV tonight. And that sort of just inspired all of us. And then I got very heavily into...
So were you playing poker?
The industry. I was playing poker, but I was also... It was around this time that a friend of mine said to me, who's one of the partners in the business now, I've got a great idea. I want to sell poker sunglasses. And we looked at him like he was fucking mad. Like, what are you talking about? I've got this great idea. I'm going to buy a pair of sunglasses and I'm going to brand them Party on one lens, Poker on the other. And I'm going to drive to Party Poker's offices and sell them these glasses for 10 bucks a pair. I'm going to make them in China for nothing. My dad knows a guy who knows a guy. So off he went. He did this thing.
Is this the start of the merchandise?
This is the birth of the whole of that business, where he did it. We drove there. And we knocked on the door. We had no meeting. We said, we'd like to speak to the CMO, please. Right. And at this time, Party are the biggest site in the world. All of the American traffic, all of the European traffic. The CMO comes down. I won't say his name. He's a nice guy. And he was like, love them, boys. Love them. I'll take 10,000. And I'm looking at John. We're like, what? You know, what the hell?
We need to go to China quick.
So we drive home. We were so broke that we didn't fly there. We drove in the car with the glasses, and it took us like 2 or 3 days to drive back up through Spain and get to London. And we're talking the whole time. And like,
this is entrepreneurial spirit that you just can't teach.
No, it was mad.
It's like showing up to a meeting that you shouldn't be at with a product that you don't have. And no idea of how you're going to deliver.
Oh, it gets so much worse.
I love it.
We had a discussion, and John's like, I'm going to make everything. Hoodies, T-shirts, flip-flops, bath towels. I don't care. Anything with a logo on, we're going to produce for all of the gaming companies. And I was thinking, what the fuck are they doing with 10,000 pairs of glasses? Who are they going to? Is it a trade show? Is it players? And it turns out that Party Poker had a shop. Every time you played a hand of poker, you got a point. And they would put these items in the shop so you could buy them for points. And they created that first loyalty.
So you didn't know that before you went?
Had no idea, right? We clearly didn't do our homework at all, right? We're idiots. But we get there, they've got this whole scheme. And we, over the course of those 2 days, decided, let's build technology to copy this. And instead of it being for Party Poker, we can make it white label for the whole industry. And that's exactly what we did. And in within 3 years, we'd signed like, it took us about 3 years to get to 50 sites, 50 different clients. It's taken Gift and Go 5 months to get to the same number.
Okay.
So we know we're massively ahead of ourselves.
Is part of that because you've got the relationships or... I mean, you would guess that you would
there's
better.
Yeah, there's
like you start the same business.
We've been
again.
In the industry for a decade. Yeah, yeah. Like, we know.
Now you're not sort of knocking on random people's doors, hoping they're going to answer.
We're still doing that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you want to do a deal with Amazon, you don't get a phone number.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to think outside of the box and be intuitive in how you get those ins. And when I look at LinkedIn and I see people like, oh, I've got this great idea. I just need to speak to some person at Amazon. Like, somebody connect me.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, do you know how hard I had to work to get an in?
Last thing I'm going to do is give you...
There's not a chance. No. And that's why I tend to stay off these... LinkedIn platforms now in terms of content.
That part of the hustle, I think, is just so important. It's like the amount of people, almost everyone I know has got a great idea or had a great idea. Yeah. I had a great idea once.
Yeah.
And part of this documenting it is...
I have people tell it now. People will say to me, I've had your idea.
Yeah.
I thought of that years ago.
Yeah.
Well, you don't even know what to say. Yeah. Like, okay, right, yep. Yeah. All right.
Interesting.
Yep. Should put some money in then.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can still have a piece of your idea.
While the valuation's still relatively low.
But that's a whole journey as well, like raising. And I always thought I'm going to love it. It's going to be so exciting. And I'm going to stand on the stage and talk about the company. And people are going to throw money at me, you know. And the reality is very different. I think when you're driving the business forward with momentum... And you're seeing results.
It's vital, though.
You've got this thing, though, that's sucking your time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you put, like, the best corporate finance company. We've got a great corporate finance company that we're working with who do take away some of the pain. But still have to do it. It's your business. Like, what are you going to do? Just let someone...
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this, actually, because it's part of the job that I actually really like.
Yeah.
And a lot of the kind of... legwork goes into stuff like this. Like, yeah. I think this supports me when I do eventually stand up on stage or I present or I run someone through my pitch deck. It's like, here's some evidence of who I am, that I'm not just saying this to you for the first time. I've been preaching these things before. But the most important part, I think, about what you said is that it is a huge distraction. It's a huge distraction. It stops you doing what you're good at, which is thinking outside the box, finding out how to get in front of people that are actually going to buy the products. You know, you need both sides. And I guess from my point of view, I see myself developing into chief fundraiser, you know, as in I don't expect or want anybody else to stand up and sell my business and try and raise money. I think there are better people that operationally, there are better people at, you know, growth hackers and all these types of skills that I need. I believe you need to everyone needs to play to their strengths, if you like.
I hate the growth track. Growth hacker term. I hate this. You know,
I just heard it the other day. I love it.
Oh, I'm so. Or anyone that refers themselves as a ninja on the in any job spec or on their page, you're not a ninja
unless you are actually a ninja.
Sorry to go into it.
Yeah.
Right. Gripe over.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's. I see what you're trying to do with the content, and I think, you know, I'm jealous in some ways because we haven't been on the content vibe like this, and I've always been very. You know, I don't want to put my face out there and to speak, especially when raising, for fear of putting my foot in something or like coming across as the wrong guy.
Yeah.
But I think you know, this is good for me to just actually do it. Relax. Yeah,
definitely.
The internet is telling us this is the way forward.
It's the way now.
We never had this.
Yeah. You have to
know. We never had any of this.
I'm a massive believer that you have to play with the tools that are at your disposal.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, like you said, if you don't do it, someone else will. And it could make the difference of, you know, them getting in front of the right person at the right time before you or a different time. The other thing is, I said in an Instagram post the other day, don't underestimate how much of a big distraction this is and a cost this is. You know, like you said, there's people here.
This is mad.
Pretty much everyone's on the payroll. The only person not earning any money is me.
Of course.
And this is just my big dream of, you got to go, you got to earn your stripes. You got to go through the motions. You got to learn in order for the content to get good, in order for these podcasts to sound interesting. I needed to go through the first three where it's like, hello, I'm rubbing a microphone. Oh, I don't know how this works. How's this going to come across? Now I'm videoing it in the back of a fucking Land Rover Defender. And
you don't get that instant feedback, though, either. It takes a long time, I think, for this podcast series to scale. And I think you've just got to grind it out for two years.
The good thing for me is I'm enjoying it. I've come from sitting behind a desk working for more financial institutions that I built that way last time round. And now I'm thinking, I want to enjoy my life. Yeah. I want to have fun. I want to learn new skills. I want to speak to, you know, try and extract some of the good information from the people that I like talking to and share that and, you know, see how it...
You've got no fear of the social shit.
You've got no fear of failing, full stop. You just said something before about, you know, I don't want to put my foot in it. I am not worried at all about putting my foot in it.
Yeah.
In fact, if the person watching it doesn't want to transact with me for any reason because of something that I've done or said, then they're probably not the right customer for me. And the beauty for me is that everyone is a potential customer. So the people that don't want to work with me, don't like me, they can just get that out of the way now and go and sit in another room somewhere and never have to watch or listen to me. But the people that do like it and the people that respond to it and the people that want to hear more, I think are people that are likely to become customers of the business and give genuine, honest feedback, which we need.
Yeah, it's so important when you're working truly agile and everyone is on board, you get the feedback, it goes into the flywheel and you build, you know, more stuff out of it. You build the right stuff. Some feedback though is hard to listen to and you don't want to.
Yeah.
There's been so many features I've built that I don't want to build, but unfortunately, you know, it's the right thing for the business at that time to do this for this.
Yeah, and you wouldn't know that it was wrong unless you tried it and you'd figured that out, you know?
Yeah, yeah. When you're doing something new, you never know. Yeah. Like I was saying before, like we don't know what sites people are going to build. We don't really know what people are going to redeem tomorrow. Mm. It's all new, and I think as long as we are passionate about what we want to do and we're happy in the journey and like by we I mean like the three partners and our staff.
It's flying my ear. Carry on.
I just want everyone to sort of be happy on a daily basis with work in general. I don't think work stops at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I think that everyone has to be on board and, you know, all in to the project. And when called upon, you know, you don't even have to ask. People want to do it.
Yeah.
And we're lucky that we're building that now, and that's taken a long time.
Yeah,
that's been the hardest part. Like truly building a team, people, that's the hardest thing.
I agree. I mean, I can see Bradley's, who you might not have known was behind the camera, itching to get some of his questions out.
I think it's been easy to stay off this one. I think you guys have hit the nail on the head with quite a few things. So, but it leads us really into the next question. What do you guys both think are the key elements when building a team?
I'll take this one. I mean, so much has changed in the way that I'm doing things this time around from how I did it last time. So much has changed. I mean, you were just talking about one of the things that I just feel... I don't think I could build this business without constructing it in the way I have, which is, first and foremost, when building a team, personality first. Can I work with this person? Do I trust them? Do I like them? Do I believe that they love the product, that they understand the product? I'm not even talking about what their skills are, what their experience is, where they've worked before, what their previous job was. None of that at the beginning is interesting to me at all. The only interesting things are they a good fit for the existing team? Is it somebody that we like and that we want to work with? Secondary to that is, what are your best skills? If you could do any job in this business, what would you do? Because I want people to play to their strengths. I don't want to have pulling this guy to fix this problem because he's the only person around. So, and then on top of that again is, why on earth does anybody need to be stuck at their desk between 9 and 5? I'm building a business where hopefully we'll be attracting users from all over the world, buying property all over the world. I mean, 9 to 5 in this country isn't even 9 to 5 in any other country. So Yeah. You know, I want people to be motivated to work when they're at their best. So some people have got kids, they want to do the school run. There's no chance of them arriving at their desk before nine. Don't care if you arrive at 11, 12 or 1, as long as when you arrive, you're ready for action. As long as you don't go to sleep every night, sort of ignoring your emails and think, you know, the old attitude was, I've always had my emails 24/7, always, always. A lot of people still don't know what emails they've had at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 at night until they get into their office the next day. And it's just a different way of working.
Do you think that's still...
Yeah, that's definitely.
Still happens, or they just ignore them?
No, I actually think... I mean, look, I've come across people who are like, oh, no, I don't have my work emails on my phone. I guess that's the kind of
attitude. I think you're less of a man. Like, if someone actually said that to me,
how could you not?
Like,
yeah. That's like saying... It ain't
nice. I'll call your house phone.
Yeah. I don't know my number, so good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. Still get a bill though.
Yeah, it's the culture. It's the culture of exactly what you were saying. People should be happy to come to work. They should be motivated to work at their best whenever they feel comfortable, without the sword of Damocles holding above their head with, well, you're going to get in trouble for doing something that doesn't affect the business in any way, shape or form, but it's just a rule. And I'm just not a rule abider anyway.
Yeah, I mean, no, for sure. I think that's like quite an extreme take on it, on like being, I don't know the right word to say it, like liberal with workplace.
Yeah.
I still think there is a value to have set office hours or a range of hours that people are coming in. I want to see people. I want to talk
every
to
day.
People. Yeah, every day. We have two offices. I go from technology office working with developers and product owners and business
analysts.
You don't
see everyone every day, you can't.
No, but I some days I might.
Some days I do. It's just more rare than it was before.
Yeah, which depends.
If I come in at nine, I know that my whole banker desk whole team will be there. But if we've got a Monday morning meeting and someone's on holiday but they want to dial in, what difference?
I think
it's Monday morning meeting. You're in the meeting.
Really important shit. If you miss that, it does upset me.
Mm.
Like, especially if it's something I've drilled in, like, we're doing this on this. This is the preparation.
I agree with that.
This is what I need to know. So that will always upset me. Everything else can be flexible as long as I get the feeling you're all in.
Yeah.
You know, you're all in. Like, great example. I hired a guy and his first weekend, he came in on the Tuesday. And on the Friday night, I was looking at the system and I was checking, like, checking transactions, like seeing the order flow. And, you know, sometimes there's some manual intervention that we can do on the platform if an order fails because the guy enters the wrong address or puts a decimal point after the end of his postcode or something that's going to reject it. You can open it up and you can simply, you know, remedy the situation. Yeah, reprocess it through Amazon. Only company in the world to be able to do that, and then you know, get on with your day. So I see this guy, new joiner, in the system fixing orders. This is on day five. This is 9:30 at night on a Friday. I remember telling him to my wife, being like, you know,
he's a keeper.
He is on it. And like you said, you don't really care too much what the background is. You know, he was on it. He was showing me everything that I needed to see. Those people are diamonds in the rough. Do you know how hard it is to find? And, you know, I don't want to get flamed, but recruitment and that whole world out there of that, I think it has its place if you need to find people and you want to pay a price.
Mm.
We don't. We do it ourselves. I manually create a spreadsheet of interview times. Yeah. I don't use HR. I do the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing it through social. So yeah. I met Bradley through social, through a mutual friend of ours. A guy that I've known for years and years said, I'm watching your Instagram every day. You mentioned something about needing some help. You need to talk to this guy. Amazing. I met Justin and Red through Instagram.
Shout out for Nick Jones.
What's up? Toma was born into the family, so he doesn't count. Last week, three people reached out to me saying that they had a friend or that they knew someone that was looking for a job.
Amazing.
Completely random.
Yeah, amazing.
One of them is
high quality lead.
I mean, you know, firstly, I genuinely only want to work with people who want to work with me.
Yeah.
But that, you know, so it's not like in the old days you used to come to an interview and I'd say to someone, what do you know about us? Nothing. Well, fuck off then.
Yeah. You couldn't even be bothered to look at my website. These guys are like, I've been watching for 6 months and I want to be involved.
That's amazing.
You know, this is what I'm good at.
That's amazing. If this helps you in any way with that, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a game changer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I even posted on my Instagram, I know the sister of a very, very close friend of mine who we'd never really discussed work. She sent me a message saying, I want to work for you. I was like, cool, what do you do? She was like, I'm the best PA in the world.
I'm a hairdresser.
Cool, I don't really need a PA. But, you know, I think I posted like, anyone who works for me needs to be able to answer these things. She sent me back like the longest text message I've ever received in my life. And I was like, I think I'm going to hire her.
Yeah.
And I was like, actually, I don't need her. But she's fucking good.
You should meet her, I think. And you should
judge and basically I went back to her and said, if I ever hire in this role, you'll be interviewed first.
Yeah.
I won't even talk to anybody else. I'm not even going to see anybody else because she's already shown more of the skills that are required to be good at your job than the most troubling thing about recruiting. And I despise it, which is why I did my intern recruitment day, is you don't know what someone's going to be like at their job until the first day they start. Because most people are either good at interviewing and bad at their job, or bad at interviewing and good at their job, or, you know, you could have that end of the spectrum.
100%.
So, you know, you take people 100%. Through another interview, you ask them to stand up, you ask them to do a pitch, everything's polished, everything works, and getting Mundo, it happens. It does. I want to try and eliminate that, and the way I'm eliminating it is by trying to attract good people first.
It's very difficult.
It's
definitely like up there in the list of challenges. Might not be the biggest challenge, but it's definitely up there. To come back to the original question,
surround yourself with good people.
What was the original? That you should do in your life generally.
Yeah, and even more so in your business.
Key elements for building a team.
Key elements for building a team. I think my answer might be a bit different to yours, because I would compartmentalize and I would say there are certain people, certain pillars that I need to have in place to operate properly. Good financial CFO type person. A number two in terms of selling and account management, someone who I can go out there, do the madness, meet the people, sell the dream, and someone who can then scoop up everything and ensure that it happens, ensure contracts get signed, onboarding happens.
Is that same person able to then build a team?
Yeah, 100%. They should be super responsible for that.
Because I find one of the biggest issues is that what happens, especially with salespeople, and I've seen this time and time again, salesperson, better than everyone else, climbs up to number one, it's been number one 6 months in a row, right now you're in charge of the team. The reality is that person is terrible at managing teams.
It happens to me. It's exactly.
Terrible at managing a team, then distracted from doing what they're good at, which is actually writing new business, then their numbers drop, everybody else is being managed by somebody, you know, it's a recipe for disaster.
It's hard. But what do you do when you get the call though? Like,
you say no. I spoke to someone the other day who's worked for me before, said, I've got this new role, I'm now the head of sales. I was like, what? You're head of sales? That's a bad idea. How are your figures looking? Well, everyone's figures are now my figures, so your figures are shit, right?
Yeah.
Why is that? I'm sitting up at night writing reports, I've got no guidance. I was like, okay, cool, this is just not going to work.
This goes
back to my point. Play to your strengths, okay? If you are a sales guy, don't clean the cars, just sell them.
Yeah.
If you need it to be clean to sell it better, find someone that's good, quick and cheap at cleaning them, and don't be like, I'm going to not sleep any hours of the day because this whole attitude of, well, if I don't do it myself, it's not going to be done properly. That is out. That's the sort of thing that gets you marched out the door.
Yeah.
Because you need to be able to offload, you need to be able to train people, you need to be able to...
You need to let people fail.
Yeah.
You have to just let people fail with a smile and mop up afterwards and make decisions, you know, sometimes big decisions about how you're going to do things. But generally, yeah. I don't know. I would have my CFO person. I would have my my sales person, my number two. And then depending on, you know, what the business is. I mean, for us now, I think you need to be thinking on international sales and expansion. And how we're going to staff up a team in another country successfully, and how much trust we're going to have to give in other people. You know, I was saying at the beginning, we're like 5 weeks away from delivery of the most exciting thing I've ever done in my career, ever. Like the tech that the thing that we've built in partnership with another company and where it's going is a massive, it's never been done before. It's a massive game changer in a certain vertical, you know, and I'm not,
you need to come back and tell us about it.
I would love to. My partner needs to let me actually discuss it and give me the right paperwork to sign it.
Yeah.
But I'd love to. When all of that happens, you know, we've got a potentially massively lucrative contract worth north of $150 million in a country where we have no staff, no office, nothing.
That is the power of the internet.
And we need to get there now, and we need to, you know, fucking build this thing quickly and find the right people in trust. And we're on aeroplanes every, you know, 2 weeks. We don't even go all together anymore because that's just a waste of time. So we're getting like cheap flights. One of us will go 1 week, come back. Then the next week, someone else goes.
Yeah, so it's
we do bank, lawyer, recruitment.
So why aren't you like tooling up now and taking a space and finding someone that you can trust?
Oh, we're trying.
Taking them
we're
to trying. The meetings, it just takes time.
For the US, like we're trying. We're trying all the time. There's, you know,
if you want to work for Joe, hit me up, DM me, and I'll put you in touch.
If you're based in the US,
what are you looking for? Tell us what you're looking
for. There.
Yeah.
Someone with.
We're going to find you.
My ideal utopian person. My ideal thing is I can get everything I need to get done with just one person. And I can put that one person in an office or with remote work, or a mix of the two. We have another potential partner.
Experience in your sector?
So I need someone who has experience in buying, purchasing. No suppliers, big quantities of items. You might get an email one day, we need 5,000 toasters, all sent to one address. We want to pay this much money for them. Go and source those items. I have no real supply chain in the US.
Amazon.
Okay, so I have Amazon. I have two or three other big boxes that I can go to. I have a couple of
alliances. Rather than retailers.
But I don't know, I go to a guy who has 200 suppliers. I don't have the 200 suppliers.
Yeah.
So I need someone with a bit of experience who can pick up the phone, have a bit of spiel, talk, you know, I need this now. I need to get a quote.
And in the US, because their US products being delivered to US customers.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
And that's, you know,
correct.
Just knowing the right people is a massive.
Sometimes the option's going to be buy from China.
Yeah.
And we need to know, okay.
What's the positives and negatives?
What's the lead time? Yeah. What do I need to go back to the client with? If you've worked in that area, promotional merchandise or on a buying team for a big retailer, you know about these things.
Yeah.
You know about lead times, you know about production cycles, you know about stock levels and inventory. The cool thing that we can do is we can take any product from anyone anywhere and insert it into Amazon and call it off of our platform and still get it delivered Amazon Prime the next day. So end customer logistics, getting something posted through your door,
same
experience. I'm covered. Yeah. I've got Amazon, I'm covered. Actually finding something that isn't available from Amazon.
Or that you can buy cheaper in bulk.
I'm happy to process in an... I would rather process an order in an automated way and let the robots order all of the items than have anyone pick up a phone and try and do something manually for a couple of margin points. Don't think it's worth it.
Okay.
I want to have as little interaction with people as possible. I want to automate as much as possible. And then...
Is that just because it makes the user experience better?
It just doesn't need a human. It's just unnecessary to have human roles of just clicking buttons and sort of these brain dead operational roles, I think.
So it's only when
like,
you're.
I want an operational person that gets excited by the tech and it's like, Joe, you don't understand. We need to build this, this, and this. And this feature here that you've just launched is super cool, but we need to change it like this because otherwise I'm not going to get it. I need the guy
with
the ops
or
knowledge.
A yes man. You're looking for.
No.
Someone, the opposite.
My best guys, sometimes I think, you know, they just want to argue with me.
Yeah.
But it's good. Yeah. It's good. Because we all need that. You need to be told, no, mate, it's wrong.
Yeah.
You're totally wrong. You're thinking
Yeah,
wrong.
The last thing you need is people saying, yeah, you're right, we should do that.
Yeah, it always worries me.
Yeah.
Really?
Me too.
Okay. Straight off the bat, I'm right.
Yeah. You're not are you listening?
Yeah.
I said something to trick you and you haven't picked it up.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this. So much so that we're definitely going to come back and do a part two.
What other questions has Bradley got?
What's Bradley got?
So we've got some more questions. I mean, to be
You're
honest...
You're not cutting me off that quickly.
To be honest, you've covered the majority of the questions. You've been that good. Okay. We've got some stuff about Arsenal and Spurs, because you're a Spurs fan, you're an Arsenal fan, but we're not going to... I think we should maybe move on from that.
We've signed some
How's
players,
the Champions
though?
League final?
You didn't go, did you?
Talking to anybody about any of this stuff. I'm an NFL fan. I'm an NFL fan. These days, but it's good to see Tottenham actually buying players, and I am very much a Daniel Levy fan, huge Daniel Levy fan, of huge admiration.
You admire the business side of it.
I think he is, in the way that he conducts himself and the way that he conducts his business on behalf of the club, I think he's outstanding and he's the best chairman that has ever existed in this league. That's what I think. The club may not have the most success.
So you're breaking up a bit.
But the way that he conducts himself, and if you've ever been around him and he might not be a tall guy, but he has a big aura and he talks very sharp to the point. He is on it.
No wasting time. No,
with anything or anyone, he's on it. If you can benefit the club, great. If you can't benefit the club, it's not worth it. Yeah, and I'm sure in anything that he would have put his mind to doing, he would have been successful. And the only idiots that say negative stuff, they don't understand. They don't. Well, they just don't see what happens on a daily basis.
Football's so weird though that it sort of transcends business. It just all sort of logic just goes out the window. People just see my team. It's like an addiction.
Fan stuff, yeah, but it's also become
the amount of people who were buying Arsenal tickets and then leaving. Like, what's the logic here? What, buying tickets?
Arsenal's
and then
an interesting case study with Arsenal Fan TV and all of that, everything that blew up socially off of that. You know, Arsenal Fan TV was a great watch if you're a Spurs fan after Arsenal had lost.
Yeah.
Or a Man United fan.
Or any fan, right? We would legitimately be like, what are the guys there going to say? I don't know how much it resonated with Arsenal fans, but that was the first time something happened like that.
Yeah.
And then they campaigned literally for the manager to get fired.
Yeah, I bet he left when he wanted to.
Yeah.
I can promise you one thing, having sat in that stand for a long time, they weren't the only people campaigning for the manager to go
not.
At that point.
Of course not.
But that having a platform and having a voice and then seeing, it's just interesting with all of this type of, I consume pretty much, I would say, 90% of my TV through YouTube. 90% of what I watch now is on YouTube.
Okay.
Sky, I actually cancelled Sky and sent the boxes
Netflix?
Back.
Netflix? Are you on Netflix?
Yeah, I'm on Netflix, but it's all a bit samey now.
Amazon Prime?
I've got them all, mate.
Amazon Prime.
I mean, I got rid of Sky. I haven't even got YouTube Premium now. I don't know why.
You must be the only person
I
in the world.
I probably am.
To
I wanted to watch
to
the
day.
New Eminem movie, and it was dope.
You must be the only person that
not
that
he just put
that.
His hand up.
Oh wow.
I also subscribed to YouTube Premium as well.
Wow, really?
You're the only person in the car who doesn't.
I'm not subscribing. Well, what benefits do you get from you? What, no ads?
No, it's basically Netflix. It's
I don't even
Netflix.
Get no ads.
I think you do get no ads.
Okay, fine.
No ads.
Then maybe.
But no, there was a movie that I wanted to watch that's only on YouTube, and I wanted to watch it, and it's like £10 a month. I went to the cinema with my son yesterday, £44 to see Toy Story 4.
Wow.
£44.
Was that just on pick and mix?
I mean,
or?
Yeah, a lot of it was. And hot dogs. And
I have a 7-year-old. She's too terrified to go. She just doesn't want to go to the cinema. Really? 4-year-old loves it, wants to go every week. 7-year-old, no chance.
Fair enough.
No chance, mate. But kids, that's the greatest project, I think. Like when it comes to project management, I've got my company here, then I've got kids. And I know you've spoken as well about, in your last episode regarding work-life balance, and you had this whole thing about work-life balance, which everyone seems to be talking about. I've once told the CEO of quite a big public gaming company in a job interview that one of my best attributes was that I had a great work-life balance. And he turned around and looked at me and went, why the fuck do I want to know that?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
True story.
Damn right.
And he's damn right. I was an idiot.
Yeah. Did you get the job?
That was one of the worst interviews if not the worst one I've ever done. I had a big jug of water on the table. This is a new CEO of a very big public company. His first move was to make 300 people, 400 people redundant. Apparently, he would sack them by video. He would just make a video and email it to 400 people, right? And if you get that video, you're out. It just tells you you're out. Relentless.
If you just see it on someone else's phone, you're out.
He's still a massive CEO at another massive company. And he was just known to be the... just a proper alpha male CEO, didn't give a shit, would not dance around anything. Every word he spoke was like a knife in your stomach. And he, I was in this interview with him for quite a high up role. I started by taking a big jug of water and putting it on the table, knocking it over, smashing the jug, water fucking everywhere, all over him, all over me. He looks up at me and he goes, You're going to get a towel for that? I'm like, yes, yes, yeah, I will. Sort of, you know, waddled out of the bloody room to reception. And anyway, still did the interview. I said, must have spoke the biggest amount of shit in it. Like, put my foot in it a million times. I think I was super nervous as well. It was a role that I actually really wanted, at a company I really liked. I think that put a lot of pressure on me at that time in my life. So I didn't get it, but it was probably a good thing. Because now definitely. I'm out here, you know, managing to do it myself.
You just reminded me of a story I'm going to tell quickly. Yeah. But one of the most... I've picked up some interview questions that I like to ask. And from... They were put in front of me by one of my operations managers at West One back in the old days. And I used to read these questions, and I interviewed this girl, and we used to ask, what would your friends say about you? And what would your work, how would your work friends describe you? And how would your friends describe you?
Right.
And she said, so how would your work friends describe you? Gobby twat.
Oh, that's perfect.
I was like, okay, is that definitely your answer?
Yeah.
And what would your friends say about you? And she went, yeah, gobby twat. I was like, cool. Interview's over. Pleasure to meet you. I mean, use your brain.
She's used her brain. She's made a decision.
What I've learned now is she might have actually been good at her job, though. Give her a chance. Yeah, because in an interview, you can't ask someone to actually, okay, right, sit down, draft an email.
It's almost like so bad, so funny that you need more. It's like those acts that go through on X Factor, the really bad ones. People just want to get more embarrassed. In a way, I'd give her a second interview. More questions. It's a bit terrible.
Yeah. We done?
I think we're done. I think
are we done.
Anything else? Just tell us where, if you did come back in 6 months, where are you going to be at? Where would you like to be at? Or where
six
do you
months,
expect to be at?
End of H2, like end of the year. I know exactly what the goals, what the milestones that we need to reach are: number of orders, number of transactions, number of clients,
sales, basically.
Sales and projects,
sales
like
and tech
projects that we've invested in and that we're building, go live, come to fruition, hit the milestones that we need. Organic stuff hits the milestones. We've obviously got investment milestones as well. So yeah, the next 6 months are probably going to be just as mad as the last 6 months. Just keep going, different stuff every day.
Love it.
Really, and build the platform, and yeah,
wicked.
That's it, really.
Love it, mate. Thanks for coming on.
No, it's been a pleasure.
It's been fun.
It's been a pleasure.
Do it again.
In 6 months' time, I want to come back and go to a fucking festival, though.
Fine, you're on.
We'll find out what festivals there are in 6 months' time. I don't know.
Christmas festival.
We'll definitely try and get this move at least maybe moving.
There you go, that's 6 months, right?
It'd be good to actually drive it somewhere, and
we could just take the handbrake off and roll forward a bit.
Yeah, we could do.
Actually, better not plugged in.
Justin's like, no.
We're done. It's a wrap.
All right, wicked. Thank you.
That is a wrap. That was incredible. See the pipe there. Really, really good. All right, wicked. Literally.